This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, February 26th. I'm Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. Coming up this week, lawmakers in Juneau are getting closer to producing what will be a lean operating budget, and the public will get its chance to weigh in on that next week.
We are transitioning to a smaller government in Alaska. We're also somewhere along the way transitioning into an era where we're going to have to bring in new revenues into the picture.
Bryce Edgman offers an update. We'll take a look at a Little Beaver Roundup present and hear from some folks about the festival's yesteryears.
And I was in the eighth grade then, and all the girls came to town and watched the pageant. And we really thought it was something special.
Republicans head to polling sites next week to weigh in on the presidential nominees. Alaska's Republican Party sends a whopping 28 delegates to the July convention, so Super Tuesday is a pretty big chance for registered Republicans to play a part in this process.
Once that nominee is decided, and as they march toward November, well, then we only have three electoral votes. So we have a big impact at this time, at this stage of the election.
Those stories and more are coming up after a look back at some of the week's news. On Tuesday evening in South Shore, Aleknagik, an intoxicated 52-year-old Robin Chithlik allegedly stabbed his wife more than two dozen times. Chithlik remains in custody, and the victim is recovering from the wounds. Pamela Dale is the state's prosecutor and asked that Chithlik be held on $100,000 bail.
It is a very serious case, and it's charged attempted murder, murder one. When he was assaulting her with the knife, he was saying that he was going to kill her.
Chithlik is also charged with fear assault for allegedly using a scoped hunting rifle to threaten the unarmed VPSO who responded to the scene Tuesday night. Dillingham police arrested Chithlik last November for threatening people with a knife at a Dillingham apartment. Prosecutors dismissed that case in December. On Wednesday, the state's Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office received the first 68 applications for commercial cannabis licenses, and the rollout of the new system reportedly went smoothly. In Dillingham, the Marijuana Advisory Committee met for the first time the same night. The city council's representative on the committee, Misty Sabo, says she thinks the committee will probably recommend some amount of commercial pot sales in town. One reason for that, she says, is to bring the business above board.
I feel like the people that are on the committee right now would rather see regulated commercial sales than the continuance of the current black market that we all know is going on.
Dillingham's Marijuana Advisory Committee meets again next month and will eventually make policy recommendations to the city council. The 2016 Iron Dog Snow Machine Race is moving to the Rivers of the Interior on its way to the finish line in Fairbanks. Teammate members Tyson Johnson and Tyler Ackelstad held a narrow 38-minute lead when they got into Galena this morning. Ackelstad said this morning that they were ready to push full throttle if necessary, but right now are choosing to play it safe.
Coming from Nome to here, any sort of sections that we thought was going to fatigue our machines or potentially have a problem, we just shut it back down and really, you know, went 60%. You know, we just really just wanted to get through it all, and we're saving these machines. You got to get them to the finish.
All teams have to take a 10-hour layover in Galena, Ruby, or Tanana before they push into Fairbanks along the Tanana River. The race is expected to conclude by midday tomorrow. This week, the Federal Subsistence Board approved an increase to the bag limit of caribou on the Nooshigak Peninsula from 2 to 3 animals per hunter for the remainder of this season. Biologists are looking for a way to cull up to half of the estimated caribou population on the peninsula. For 3 winters in a row, warm temperatures have prevented most from getting to the hunting grounds. The federal judge assigned to the Pebble versus EPA lawsuits was briefly hospitalized in Phoenix, Arizona this week. The Associated Press reported that Judge H. Russell Holland was taken out of a federal courtroom on a gurney, apparently suffering from bronchitis. Holland was expected back on the bench later in the week. After hearing from fishermen and the industry, House Fisheries Committee Chair Luis Stutz chose to put Governor Walker's proposed fish tax increase on hold.
I don't want to see the fishing industry be the only one that's subject to a tax increase. Consequently, this bill is going to be held in committee until an undetermined time, until I feel comfortable that the fishing industry, in fact, is not being singled out.
While that proposal may be on hold for the moment, Senator Mike Dunleavy fired another shot across the bow. This week, he introduced a bill to create a 12.5% Alaska fisheries royalty in place similar to the one used to capture oil revenues. House subcommittees continue to trim away at the state's operating budget. The university system, ASME, early childhood education, and public broadcasting have all been slated for deep cuts. The funding for the Dillingham DA's office was taken back out of the budget. ADF&G's commercial fisheries division was reduced by 11%, And the House Finance Committee will take up the operating budget next week and has set aside 20 hours over 4 days for public testimony. The Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association announced the four candidates for its three board seats. Mike Frasera of Kodiak and Lang Solberg of Bellingham, Washington will run unchallenged for two of the seats. Connor Smith from Seattle and Tony Wood from King Salmon will compete for seat G. Ballots will be mailed out in mid-March to all drift permit holders in the Bay. At the Alaska Symphony of Seafood competition last weekend in Anchorage, a glimmer of hope emerged for the future market of Bristol Bay's ample seafood resources. Deccan Seafood's canned smoked herring took first place in the food service division. Proprietor Warner Liu, who is the Bristol Bay fleet manager for Icicle Seafoods, says he's been looking for more profitable uses for Togiak's herring resource, which currently fetches about $50 a ton for the fishermen.
Every time I think I see something of value that's being undervalued, I jump on it, like herring. You know, there's the fishery's dying because the only market is the Japanese market, and they want the roe. And I'm thinking, after eating Larry's product, I thought, we're eating the wrong end of the fish. You know, smoked herring's delicious. We got to do something.
Lou says he's been selling his canned smoked herring to chefs and restaurants, mainly in the Seattle area, and he hopes the wind may help find a wider market for the product. And on Wednesday, families lined the streets for the annual Beaver Roundup Parade in downtown Dillingham. Nick and Masa Gumlickpuck were this year's parade marshals.
Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm excited.
First time to be the marshal?
Yeah.
What's that say? Are they telling you you're getting on in your years?
No, I do not. I hope my grandchildren's seeing me.
More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. There are few things more mundane to report on than the state of Alaska's operating budget. Maybe you too have perused the spreadsheets emerging from House Finance subcommittees this week. Lawmakers, many responding to adamant pleas from their constituents, are working to bring Alaska's government down to a size and scope befitting what is near a $4 billion deficit. The House Finance Committee will take up what the subcommittees have produced next week. During that time, there will be 20 hours over 4 days for Alaskans to tell their legislators directly what they think about the changes. Here for an update is Representative Bryce Edgman, who is on the Finance Committee and chairs two of the agency subcommittees. Good morning, Bryce. Thanks for your time. And fill us in. What's the latest from Juneau?
Well, it's my privilege, Dave, to be able to talk with you once again. And certainly, things are beginning to pick up in terms of the operating budget. Just to get everyone up to speed, in the House, we're at the point where the agency budgets, which are reviewed at the subcommittee level, are about to be completed. And next week, we're looking at actually beginning the work of incorporating all those budgets into the full budget that comes before the House Finance Committee. And on a very important note, I'd like to bring to everyone's attention that public testimony will take place on Tuesday for the Dillingham LIO site from 3:45 p.m. to 6 p.m. Unfortunately, it's going to be combined with Barrow and Fairbanks. So for the 2 minutes that each testifier gets, I would tell people to expect a long wait times, and we'll do our best to involve everybody. You know, and again, for 2 minutes, that's on one hand not a lot of time, but on the other hand, if you go with the flow, so to speak, and hear what other people have to say, you know, you can really make an impact in 2 minutes in terms of getting right to your point. So I'd emphasize that as well.
Now, this week, the finance subcommittees have kind of scrubbed the numbers a bit more, and we've noticed that the general trend has been to continue to cut beyond what the governor proposed. We've seen a few cuts that people in Bristol Bay might speak up about next week, perhaps. What's your sense of the direction it's going? Are we looking at a much leaner budget than even we expected a few weeks ago?
We are looking at a leaner budget. I would sort of put a cautionary note out there that this is, in terms of the numbers that are coming forward, even next week, still pointing to things being in a preliminary stage. There will be changes to some of those numbers. There will be revisions. But the fact of the matter is that we're having to cut the budget. We're having to make tough choices and making cuts that I personally, you know, can't support. But I think we'll get the support of the larger legislature, both in the House and the Senate. And so just ask everyone to be cognizant of that.
And the Senate will take their stab at this, at the House's work probably in the weeks ahead. And we did hear that they're looking to probably perhaps even cut further.
You know, we're hearing that. It's going to be very interesting to see where those cuts take place, because there are some areas in government that you can trim back. But I think we've also discovered in the House that there's a lot of areas that you can't cut, because if you cut them, you're cutting programs that bring in a lot of federal dollars, or programs that are protected in statute, or programs that are even protected by the Constitution. So it's a very difficult job to reduce the budget in any amount.
As I mentioned a moment ago, this is a pretty mundane topic, the operating budget, but this seems like a particularly interesting or crucial time for Alaskans to maybe pay more attention than usual. Would you say so?
Oh, absolutely. We are transitioning to a smaller government in Alaska. We're also somewhere along the way transitioning into an era where we're going to have to bring in new revenues into the picture. That's a discussion that the legislature has yet to enter into. But I fully expect, as we get into the second half of the session and perhaps, the waning weeks, that we will be focusing perhaps exclusively on new revenues. And I would ask everyone to pay close attention to that.
Bryce Edgman is the representative for District 37, a Democrat who caucuses with the House majority. Bryce, thanks for the time this morning, as always.
Thank you, Dave. And I'd like to wish everyone a happy Beaver Island week. I wish I could be home, and I hope everyone has a great time over the weekend.
Back in a moment. Now to another set of politics. Alaska's Board of Fisheries has been meeting again this week in Anchorage, taking up issues for the Alaska Peninsula, Chignecks, and Aleutian Islands. As we've listened to testimony over the past couple of days, the very familiar struggle between Bristol Bay and Area M fishermen has again emerged. And speaking with some of the Bristol Bay stakeholders present at the meeting there, they keep telling us the atmosphere has been a bit tense. Here is a little of what we've heard about some of the issues. Brad Barr, a member of Concerned Area M Fishermen who has fished in Area M since 1979, spoke up in support of Proposal 159 to open up more fishing in the outer Port Hyden area.
Bristol Bay sockeye have migrated and been caught commercially along the Alaska Peninsula for over 100 years, and the Area M fishermen have the right to fish our waters and our river systems. This is strictly an allocation fight, and I hope the board recognizes that those fish are relatively more valuable to the small fisheries along the migratory route than they are to Bristol Bay.
Pat Martin is a member of the Concerned Area M Fishermen, which wants to create a new fishery in the Cinder River section on the northern Alaska Peninsula.
All of these fish are a common property resource of the state. The closure of the Cinder River sockeye fishery has had the effect of creating a marine sanctuary with a single interest group as the beneficiary, Bristol Bay stakeholders. Remember that sockeye leaving Bristol Bay are the size of your thumb with zero market value. They gain all of their market value outside the waters of Bristol Bay. They breed them and we feed them.
Togiak's Clara Ann Martin, a set netter, said she opposes that proposal and noted that Bristol Bay residents face too many other hardships without worrying about fish interception.
You know, if this trend continues, the way our fish are being intercepted for the Bristol Bay bound salmon, Bristol Bay fishermen will become like the U.S. farmer, will disappear.
Port Hyden's Adrian Christensen had this to say.
The economy of Port Hyden and the fishery are suffering without our local fishery. The fishermen have to spend more money to get to their fishing areas up north. The fish that are caught outside of Port Hyden contribute nothing to our local economy. Port Hyden is working to create a local fishery which would diversify and improve our economy. The tribe has created a market for fishermen and is completing a salmon processing plant in Port Hyden. We are prepared to buy salmon this season and will be able to have a season lasting as long as the salmon are running and the fishermen are wanting to fish.
Finally, Nelson Lagoon resident Theo Chesley is a longtime Area M fisherman who asked the board to consider the numbers at play.
In 2015, Area M fishermen caught 167,000 sockeye in the outer Port Hyden district. In 2015, Area T fishermen caught 5.3 million sockeye in the Ugashik District. In 2015, Area T fishermen caught 8.2 million sockeye in the Igigik District. Bristol Bay processors were at max capacity. Bristol Bay fishermen were on limits. Tender lines for delivering fish were excruciatingly long. All the while, the quality of the fish, or lack thereof, rapidly became an issue. So my question to proposal authors that want to close Outer Port Hyden, how much fish do you want?
We'll have more reaction and coverage on how the board votes on the various proposals next week. Beaver Roundup is in full swing here in Dillingham, and we ask the pardon, of course, to the many other great winter festivals in Bristol Bay. This one just happens to be the easiest for us to get to. Some great photos are already online, but here's a little of what the KDLG crew has been hearing so far this week.
You go for it.
My name is Rosa Wanika.
And I'm Allie Hing.
I got the candy in my bag.
Yeah, probably when you got candy.
How much candy did you guys get? A lot.
Yeah, like half a bag this size.
Yeah. You look so fantastic.
Here's some Code Healthy Almonds.
Noah is in a trapping costume because trapping is his favorite club. My favorite club is the small farm animals, so I brought Orion the goat, and he's got our mascot banner on.
I'm Kayla Miller.
Were you on the float?
Yeah, I was. I was on the high school girls basketball team. I got two pieces from another float driving by.
I am a lumberjack, and she is going to be dressed up as an astronaut. That's what it is.
And she just kept on running and would not stop.
My name is Harper.
And your last name?
Savo.
What's your costume?
Ballerina.
What are you wearing to be a ballerina?
Tights, skirt, and...
Leotard. My name is Dave McNeese. Jeremy McGill helped make this, but this is all like the wolf paws and all the leather and the furs and everything on here is natural, and it's all local. This is a beluga backbone. This is part of a walrus. These are moose teeth.
I'm Ken.
Excellent.
And I heard this song. This song is about someone who can fix or build or do anything with their hands, but maybe didn't have a formal education. And that touches home with me because my biggest influences were that.
Well, he was a master of his trade. Could fix anything ever made with his hands. Smarter than most PhDs, could build anything you see with his hands. He was an educated man.
Some of the sounds of Beaver Roundup so far. Plenty more fun to come this weekend. You're listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Well, Alaskans have enjoyed the cheap seats so far for this year's presidential election, but next Tuesday, registered Republicans will get their chance to weigh in on who of five candidates they would like the state's outsized number of delegates to support. The party has winnowed its ballot down to five names: Ben Carson, John Kasich, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and Donald Trump. District 37 Republican Chair Richard Sherman says that Rubio, Cruz, and Trump will probably do well Tuesday.
Those are the three that are going to probably be getting most of the votes. Trump is very divisive. People love him or are not too crazy about him, and so are the other candidates in some ways, but I think Trump brings the most emotional response from people.
Bristol Bay Republicans will need to be in Naknek from 3 till 8 on Tuesday, that is Super Tuesday, in order to vote. The party is expecting a big turnout this year, says Communications Director Suzanne Downing, whom I spoke with yesterday.
In 2008, we had 12,000 people participate. In 2012, we had 14,000 plus participate. And we are expecting maybe 17 this time. So we really do think it'll be a big day.
Now, how does this work exactly? It's a little bit different than just going to the polls on Election Day.
It is. This is actually part of a party process. And so it's the party determining who the nominee is going to be for president. So you get Republicans going to the poll, basically, and they are going, in our state, they're going to mark a ballot. They aren't going to go to a caucus situation like in a Grange or in a gymnasium and walk around to different parts of the room. They won't have to listen to speeches. They won't have to hear debates. They just go in and they mark their ballot and put it in the box. They just determine who they want for president. And then when our delegates go to Cleveland in July, our delegates have to vote that way.
And how many delegates are there in Alaska?
There will be 28 delegates that go to the national convention and 25 alternates, and those will come from all over the state. So we've got as many delegates as Oregon and just two fewer than Iowa.
How is that? How is that possible that Alaska has so many?
It's determined because we are such a strong Republican state. We have Republicans in the Senate, in the House, and then also in the Senate and the House at the state level. And we just have so many Republicans here that we are awarded a lot of delegates. That way, we really matter in this process all the way up through the National Convention. Once that nominee is decided, and as they march toward November and the election, well, then we only have three electoral votes. So we have a big impact at this time, at this stage of the election. Later on, our impact is quite a bit less than big states like California or Ohio, Pennsylvania, or Florida.
You have five names on the presidential preference poll. Have any of them been in the state of recent weeks to talk to Alaska voters?
Of the five that we have, Carson, Cruz, Kasich, Rubio, and Trump, none of them have been in the state in this cycle, and we just haven't seen any of them. The only one that we saw was Rand Paul. He's the only one who's come up for this cycle.
That was back several months ago. I remember that when he was in Anchorage there. What's your sense of the voting Republicans, registered Republicans so far? Where do you think they'll lean Tuesday? Will they go with this Trump momentum that we're seeing elsewhere?
I believe that we will see it more or less mirror what happened in Iowa. That's my guess, is that we'll see a pretty strong showing for Trump and Cruz. And I predict that Rubio will come in third. And again, Kasich and Carson kind of down.
Are there any candidates that the Republican Party in Alaska is concerned to see emerge at the front? There's just so much talk nationwide about Trump upsetting the establishment. Does the Alaska Republican Party share any of that concern?
We actually, as a party, stay neutral on it. We let the voters decide. But I think that basically in our state, we've got a lot of people who are kind of anti-establishment in our state. So it wouldn't surprise me if Trump did well here. So we're not really particularly concerned. I actually think that all of us trust the voters that ultimately our nation, our republic will survive and will continue on. We've got a strong constitution. We just got to keep fighting to make sure that it doesn't get eroded.
Why do you think this is such an important year? We see the Democrat side taking shape between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Looks like Hillary Clinton has more momentum. What's so important to the Republicans about this opportunity?
Well, so it's been 8 years since we've been in the White House, and we don't think the last 8 years have gone very well for the country. I think the country has recovered in spite of the presidency, but we've seen here in Alaska a lot of things shut down, a lot of scary stuff going on in terms of our freedom. And, of course, if Hillary gets in, let me tell you, we'll be hanging on to our guns because she's going after gun control, and that's really important to Alaskans. She's also said that she wants to shut down the Arctic for all Arctic drilling, and that's important to Alaskans. So we don't feel that necessarily the Democrat ticket really understands our state or what it takes to run a place like Alaska.
Suzanne Downing is the Communications Director for the Alaska Republican Party. Suzanne, thanks so much.
Thanks again.
And Alaska Democrats will caucus to help pick their party's nominee for president on Saturday, March 26th. That's a month from today. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Thank you. Beaver Roundup's dog sled races were canceled again this year. And yes, that's a bummer for the fans, but it's also a bummer for local mushers. Doesn't mean there have been no opportunities to race, though. In fact, John Hansen of New Steahawk headed up to Queethlick last weekend and took second there in the two-day 18-mile dash. Harry Alexi helps organize that event, which enticed 17 competitors this year. He says with a little restructuring of the route, the racers actually had a trail with ample snow.
We had to reroute from our original plan, but this 18 miles could be our next, I would say, one of our race course to use for these coming years. The trail all really had nothing but snow, so there was no glare ice or anything.
I saw a pretty good representation from around Western Alaska. Who were some of your racers, and who were the top three?
Mainly the locals were from the surrounding villages, from Bethel, with one exception of, the first place guy, Sergeant Guy, is from Queethlick. And the second place musher is from New Steahawk, John Hansen. And he flew in the morning of Saturday and landed about a little after 12. We picked him up and quickly brought him to the start area, in which he took off as the last position for first day. And for the first day, John Hansen and Sergeant Guy had the fastest times tied, and there it was exciting for second day.
Oh, how about that, huh? Quick turnaround. How many years has this race been going on?
It's been from early 80s. There's been different entities or groups that held it, but last 20 to 30 years, it's been the Queethlick Dog Mushers who's been making it happen.
You know, Harry, we look around and we just haven't had a good winter up here for a couple of years now, and I just wonder if mushers are able to keep up their training and everything, and if it's maybe just going to be a dying sport. What do you think when you see a good race like this over the weekend? Still some energy?
Well, with Cusco-Cameria dog racing, we've had a little decline, but, you know, there's still some interest, and that is in part to close communities within each other that alternate weekends having dog races.
When you look at the families and the kids who come just to watch, do you see when you look at the kids that this is a sport that they aspire to take up themselves?
Yes. Along with the main event that Queethlick had, we had a five-dog junior high school race, in which we had four participants. And after the last musher came in on Sunday, we had one dog and three dog races. And there's some interest.
One dog races?
Like a 100-yard sprint.
Oh, that's got to be great. Harry, thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
And that will just about do it for this week's show. We'll leave you with something special here in a moment. A reminder that you can find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at our website, kdlg.org. My thanks to Molly Dishner and Hannah Colton. I'm Dave Benninger. Do keep in touch. To take us out here, the KDLG News crew has been asking some of the elder festival goers this week what they remember and liked about Beaver Roundup's older days. Here's what they had to say. We'll see you next week.
Oh, my name is May Sievrud, and I'm from Dillingham now. Was from Alaknikik. So my maiden name is Murphy. We lived up in Alaknikik, so we would have to catch a ride into town. And I was in the eighth grade then, and all the girls came to town and watched the pageant. And we really thought it was something special. It was a big deal because we would go to town maybe once every 6 months. Not too much other than that. Maybe the Dilly Capers. And that would be talent shows. People would be comedians or, you know, just do a song or a talent that they were good at.
My name is Della Clark. There was no Beaver Roundup when I was little. It came later. When was the first Beaver Roundup? 58 or 59? The only thing I can remember is going over to my grandpa's house. He used to trap along with his sons, and there would be stacks and stacks of beaver pelts. And I used to watch him stretch them on these big frames, wooden frames. And so he would be gathering all the pelts together to bring to town to sell. The buyers would come to town. They know at the end of the trapping season was closed, and so they would come to town and buy the furs. And after they buy the furs, the trappers would go to the stores and buy their flour, sugar, all the things that they would need that they can't get on subsistence.
Okay, my name is Richard J. Clark, Sr. The first, like I told you, the first queen was Dolores Johnson. That was the number one beaver roundup.
The teams used to start down the center of town, and everybody would be gathered to the sides of the road, and the mushers would take off from there.
And I also remember Victor Sifsoff used to fly, and Nick Wall used to fly and keep track of the dog teams in beaver roundup. And they'll be saying, they're coming around here, they're just passing here, stuff like that. So they knew exactly where they're at on KDLG.
Then I started the selling Native Arts and Crafts. We would have a big deal there. We'd have people judge the artwork that the women brought in, the beading and the skin sewing.
They used to throw candy up in the air and stuff like that. Not the way they do now, drive around and throw it out there, what do you call it? They went down to City Hall. It was more like Veterans Day or something like that, but it was before Veterans Day. And they had balloon and they'd let it up, and once it came down, all the candy would come out. And if you found a little note in there, you won something. That was for kids only.
My name is Mary Watts Weiss now. I was the ex-president of Beaver Roundup in the late 80s. Yeah, I think about 5 years I was the president of Beaver Roundup. I used to love the outhouse race. I was the champion several years in a row. Yeah, I'm the one who came up with the idea for beaver buns at the Willow Tree. Yeah, it used to be just a wet t-shirt, and I felt that was very one-sided, so I asked for them to put on a men's show, and that's where beaver buns came from.
I'm Dee O'Connell. I've lived here in a really long time, like over 50 years. Young mother of three children. They were all super excited. The excitement of the dog races, that was kind of beaver roundup for them. And they're always excited to attend the dog races. And I was too.
And celebrate the roundup time in Dillingham, a.k.a. Beaver Roundup. By the shores of the New Shagak, Beaver Roundup. When the trappers all come back, Beaver Roundup. Where we gather in the old familiar way and celebrate the roundup time in Dillingham, a.k.a.
Thank you very much.